What is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer digital currency. It's anonymous and decentralized. It's a way of making millions of computers to track each and every Bitcoin on a public ledger called the blockchain. Since it leverages a public record, everyone knows Bitcoins are associated with each account and prevents anyone from spending money that isn't there. That's why Bitcoin is attracting millions of players, Goldman Sachs, Microsoft, even the Winklevoss twins. Want to try out Bitcoin for yourself? Simply that, it brings a digital currency from exchanges like Coinbase. And don't worry, it's in U.S. dollars, at least for now.
TBTL!
I can't understand a word you said the whole time.
Do you eat some peanut butter or something?
Yeah, you sound like a dog with peanut butter on the roof of your mouth.
We're just a bunch of savages, right? We're not like your fancy California friends, your George Clooney and your California raisins.
Fair warning. I party pretty hard. I've been wrecking parties since I was 13. I was like the Hunter S. Thompson of bar mitzvahs.
I thought that was some of the funniest I've heard you guys do in a long time. I was LOLing.
How can they say this about me? I don't believe it. I show them. I record everything.
Oh, hi, Tens. Welcome, one and all, to a Monday afternoon edition of TBTL. This right here, this is the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Ooh.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
I think this guy's sense of humor never developed past junior high school.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, Pod Dog.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
Pod Dog is currently at the dog park with Carrie, enjoying some quality sniffing, some quality ball chasing.
That's my wife.
But the Bay Kitty, this is actually kind of cool. The Bay Kitty is really stepping up in the clutch.
Kittens, inspired by kittens.
And she is currently curled up behind me in the Pod Dog bed here in the broadcast center. So she's filling in the pinch for the Pod Dog. So that's a nice feeling here on a Monday, here on episode 2629 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
I hope that's the actual episode number we're on, by the way. Usually when I do that, when I put that in the show sheet based on memory, almost always wrong. So let's do a quick check here. Are we, in fact, on episode 2629 in a collector series? Survey says yes, we are. I've already gotten one more thing right here on the show than I expected. All day. So that means it's going to be pretty much just mess-ups and slam-dunk three-pointers from here on out. Let's let the fun begin.
Let the fun begin.
By telling you what the plan is for today's program. A guy in Massachusetts had a run-in when he left his house for just a few moments recently.
And all I was doing was going in to put my chickens in, that's it. And all hell broke loose.
That's right, all hell broke loose. He had to battle a coyote, actually a pack of coyotes. So we'll tell you what happened. By the way, story sent to us by, I want to say, listener Chris in, wait for it, that's right, Worcester. Pronounced Worcester, Massachusetts. So we'll tell you what happened with that whole thing. Also, imagine that you were trying to launch a new brand of scotch. And you'd brought a very famous person in to help brand your scotch, your whiskey. And you had them take a taste. And their response to one of the first batches was to say, "Is you feel like being in a wood structure?"
Huh?
It's a pretty horrible Bob Dylan impression to kick things off. That would be your experience if you were if you were the guy trying to launch a new whiskey line with Bob Dylan. We will tell you about that project and what it's like to try to get Bob Dylan to tell you how the whiskey should taste that bears his name. So we will do that. We'll do emails. We'll do V-mails. And my goodness, we'll say hello to this man. He's back at it again with the White Vans, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace and their splendor, known also far and wide as the man with the iron tongue.
Are you sure?
That's what they said on Ask Jeeves.
He's Andrew Hodor Walsh, and he joins us now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington, after couple of days recovering from his medical procedure. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you, Luke. I look forward to the day that I go back and I listen to the show and I think, boy, you really talked funny after you had those tongue surgeries. How do I sound? How bad do I sound right now? How much can you tell that I'm talking weird?
If you didn't tell me that you'd been through a fairly intense tongue-related procedure, I would not have known it. You don't sound any different than normal.
Then how am I going to get any pity? Hold on.
How about now?
Oh, yeah, that sounds...
Luke, I'm in a lot of pain over here.
How about this? Could you get, like, a clothespin, and could you grab the end of your tongue like this, and just do the whole show this way?
I'm back. I guess my tongue's okay now. I will say, though, not that you asked, this was a rough one. I thought they were going...
Yeah.
I thought they were going in to clean up. I think people mostly know the backstory. And let's not make this totally about me and my tongue.
No, that's okay. This is the part of the show where we're checking in on how it went. This is exactly the time for you to transition into a story about your garbage can.
Right. Ooh, by the way, update. Mondays,
I can't play the breaking news sound because I'm currently playing John Sebastian off of the Best of John Sebastian theme from Welcome Back, Cotter.
Mondays are trash day, of course, so I put out the trash on Sunday nights, and then Mondays, I'm always excited to find out if they've come and picked up my trash. They did pick up my trash today. The only drama would be that I did not put out my composting today, which means I'll bet you the trucks took a photo. They were supposed to take a photo. Because I had called to complain that they hadn't picked up my composting the past 2 weeks.
You're now requiring photographic evidence.
I wasn't requiring it. So I called the city. I don't know, man. What's worse, this or tongue talk? When I had called the city last week to complain for the second week in a row that they hadn't picked up our compost/yard waste, they said, okay, yeah. And the woman I talked to at the city was really, really kind and down to earth and like an advocate for me. No joke, kind of the opposite of the stereotypical kind of city government worker. And she was like, yeah, I was trying to ask her if I'm putting out my trash wrong. Is there anything we can do? Should we put flags on it? She said, no, those guys are just driving too fast. It's up to them. They need to stop and look and pick up your stuff. And since this has happened 2 times in a row now, we're going to have them take a photo of your compost if it's not out there, because they're going to claim that you haven't been putting it out. But then when I went to take out the trash last night, it occurred to me, I don't really have much compost this week. So I didn't take out any compost, which means I think I am now officially trolling the compost picker uppers. Man, that was boring. I've been off the show. I haven't been on the show for 3 shows, which is a long time for me. And I wanted to start off with something a little bit more dazzling than that convoluted story about trash pickup here in the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle. I'm sorry.
You created what's a possible show title, though, Trolling the Trash Man.
Ooh, who trolls the trash man?
That also could... It sounds like that could be a Cat Stevens song.
Yeah.
Troll for the Trash Man. Later covered by Donovan. Later covered by Limp Bizkit.
The Limp Bizkit version, not as bad as you would think, actually.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, so you said to me via text message, if we can jump back to tongue talk for just a moment.
Yeah, let's do it.
You said that you thought, because this time you were under the general anesthetic.
Oh, God, I solid spoof about the general on Thursday's show.
I was going to say, I was wishing that you could have heard that.
Oh,
I
heard
very
it.
Very proud of that.
Lulled.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
Really good show, by the way. On Thursday and Friday, by the way. I thought they were... I didn't get to hear all of Friday's yet. But I'm going to, and they were really powerful stuff. So thanks for stepping
up. Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Bearing your soul.
Of course. But so you were under the general anesthetic. Now I can't not think of that cartoon character doing surgery on you, which is so troubling. And so you said to me in a text message that you thought maybe this guy really went for it. And you said maybe because he just wanted to make sure you didn't have to come back for a third visit. And also because since you were just straight up conked, he could just get at it without any pushback from you. So it sounds like this was a tougher recovery than the first time around.
Yeah, it was definitely tougher. And I kind of didn't realize. So when I texted you, I was still clearly feeling the effects of the anesthetic. And you could tell that I was pretty drugged up because I was very excited to take that wheelchair ride. Like, when any other situation like that, I would be very self-conscious about that, right? To have the, I guess,
you wouldn't
the assistant
be like,
or the nurse practitioner.
You wouldn't be me doing wheelchair wheelies right. in the airport in Arizona when we were leaving spring training.
I remember they pulled the wheelchair up next to the bed. Like, that, I assume it was some sort of a Twilight anesthetic because... It's one of those things they say, the doctor's in here. It's almost like a cartoon.
Because you thought you were a werewolf fighting vampires?
Yes, that's exactly why I found myself in Washington State.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
That's a terrible Twilight joke. Keep going.
But it is very much like in a TV show because, you know, I'm in there. They hook me up to machines. I can hear my heart beating. They give me some. They keep on calling it laughing gas. I wish they would call it nitrous because it sounds a little bit more professional. But they give me some of that to calm me down. They you know, put the needle in me and then the anesthetic in the bag and all of that, which is I don't think I've ever had that before. Maybe when I had my wisdom teeth taken out. And then I remember the doctor coming in and almost like a TV show, like kind of like. He seemed like he was at the end of a long tunnel. That's the best way I can describe it now. At the time, it didn't seem that weird, but looking back, it's just like he was sort of there, and then literally that's the last thing I remembered, and then I don't know how they woke me up. Next thing I know, I'm awake, I'm in a good mood, and she says, here's the wheelchair, and I'm like, oh, I get to go in a wheelchair. And then she puts me in the wheelchair, and she wheels me out some secret door, and Vives was waiting for me. She was my ride, and... And so I remember the whole time being in a pretty good mood. Then I was at home and then the anesthetic starts to wear off and I was in a lot of pain and I was thinking, wow, this is worse than I remembered it. And, then as that was Thursday and then Friday, I remember I was back working with you the day after you and I think we were on a trip actually well, in Chicago. Now I wasn't in great shape, but I did a whole show.
Oh, the last time around.
Yeah. And this time, like, I did not speak all day Friday. Saturday, I was finally talking by Saturday night. Like, I was in so much pain. It was so much harder. I was almost crying trying to eat my scrambled eggs on, like, Saturday because I was so hungry. I was, you know how most of my life I'm not that hungry, but I'm eating anyway? It's right. Weird to have the opposite feeling when you are just so hungry, but food sounds so horrible because... It's just so hard to swallow, and it's just very hard to explain. But this whole time, I was just like, why is it so much worse this time? And I thought, like I told you in my text, maybe they knocked me out, so they just went for it. But apparently, while I do remember getting in the wheelchair, and I do remember some things that the nurse practitioner told me, I did not remember a key thing that Genevieve told me on Saturday night, which gave me kind of a fright, if I'm being totally honest. And apparently the doctor said he saw something, quote, weird in there and decided just to, instead of take a bunch of little pieces, just take a huge, or I don't think it would be huge, but just take a whole area of my tongue, apparently, which is, I mean, going to grow back. It's not like they took half of my tongue. I'm probably exaggerating a little bit. I'm not trying to be dramatic here, but to be honest with you, like when Genevieve told me that on Saturday, which was several days after the operation, like I think the reality of everything sort of wore off, like the novelty of like, oh, I had this one last cleanup surgery and now I'm just like, I'm a little bit, I'm not trying to freak you or everybody out, but I will be honest and say like, what happened in there? Like the process this time was so much better and I had such a better attitude about it because they knocked me out and apparently I love drugs. But I got to say when all of that wore off and then I'm like, oh wait, what do you mean? It was weird. Like, that's leaving me a little bit nervous.
When do you find out what the results are of that chunk?
I think on Thursday. I have another appointment on Thursday, and so I'm hoping that means I might even call them today to make sure that means that they will have whatever results. But I don't know. Talking about this in the past, I think I was definitely trying to downplay it as much as possible for my own sake and for your sake and for everybody's sake. And so I don't want to reverse that or unduly worry everybody. But if I'm honest with you, there was a moment on Saturday when Genevieve said, wait, you don't remember the conversation? She's like, you remember the other parts. You don't remember that part? I'm like, no, I don't remember the part where she said it looked weird, so we took a lot more out. So that was definitely an upsetting thing to hear on Saturday. But
yeah,
it also
really sorry,
made, it made the pain more explainable, though, certainly. Because I couldn't – I was like, I know I was doing a show. I was at the conference with you. Remember the Third Coast conference after
the
first
one?
Yeah,
and by the way, that wasn't the world's greatest – like, I felt really bad then because you couldn't have known how much it was going to even then be uncomfortable and how much talking one does at a conference and in doing the shows. I felt really lousy about that. I'm glad you were able to get through that. I'm sorry that you're feeling unsettled by this. I would be totally unsettled by it, too. And, you know, anything I will say here would just be me trying to make you feel less nervous based on absolutely no information. But it's probably nothing.
Right, I know, and I'll probably regret.
I say that with absolutely no experience on the matter. Literally, right. No idea what they found on your tongue, but right. Just the general sense that it'll probably be fine.
But
unless
I do
it isn't,
it's probably good. I mean, listen, you know, I went in there. I was asleep. They saw something that looked weird. They took advantage of the fact that I was asleep. Took a lot of it out. I don't think this time. Like, I'm sure last time it was much more difficult with me squirming around, like sweating bullets, like kind of freaking out in the chair. I doubt the doctor accidentally left anything behind. So, you know, hopefully this will be the... I also think this is where, like, I don't believe in luck or any kind of otherworldly type of shit. Yet the one thing I tend to believe in is when I worry a lot, things turn out okay. And when I'm cavalier about things, they turn out bad. I remember the last time I went to the doctor... I was convinced. I remember I said to you on the show, I jinxed myself. I said, yeah, I'm going in for my last follow-up today, and I'm pretty sure that he's going to say that there's nothing on my tongue. I don't see anything there, and last time he said he didn't see anything. So I think I'm good here. And then I went to the doctor that day, and they're just like, okay, we'll see you in a month. we gotta take care of this. So I will never be cool about anything again.
Lesson learned is never, ever, ever think things are going to be okay.
Always
on any level,
the worst.
Regarding anything big or small.
That's
assume
the lesson.
It's going to, yeah. Oh, well, that's. I think that's a real message of hope
for
the tens of listeners
I
today.
Hope you're listening, kids.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We shall come back. We will do our top stories. We have a dazzling donor to thank today and some emails and V-mails and lots of stuff still ahead. So stay with us. This is TBTL. We will be back in just a moment. Talking Heads. I identify that part of it. What's the song, though?
The song is Girlfriend is Better. I didn't realize this is a 6-minute song. So when it gets to the chorus, you'll know it. I have a girlfriend. Okay. She's better than that. I don't know. It might kick in like 4 minutes from now. But
I'm always up for riding along with David Byrne.
The reason I'm playing it, though, is the album. How well do you know Talking Heads album names?
Is this Stop Making Sense?
No. It's...
That was a movie.
Oh,
that was
that's...
a concert movie, right?
Yeah, but I think they released an album. Was the album live? Maybe. Anyway, this is called Speaking in Tongues.
Tongues! Right. Got it. Yeah. Can you imagine a conversation between David Byrne and David Lynch? I feel like they would just sit next to each other wearing suits, just staring. And then occasionally, like maybe like a 2 to 3 hours in, one of them would just say some weird subtle thing like life is just all corners. And then the other person would just laugh and say, how droll. And then they would sit for 2 to 3 more hours in silence.
I don't know if I can picture that. Here's what I can picture. sitting in a room with two chairs. I'm in one of them. David Lynch is in the other one, and I'm talking to him. And then all of a sudden, he turns into two people. Somehow, he's both two people and one people at the same one person at the same time, and is both David Lynch and David Byrne. And then they merge again, and now I'm talking just to David Byrne. And then I can't tell, and then I might be David Lynch because I have never seen them in the same room together.
You look like a dream catcher came to life.
They have similar styles. They have a similar sort of like kind of. I believe that their art attracts similar types of people, myself included.
I don't understand what the fuck they're doing most of the time.
They're both like kind of avant-garde geniuses who are also able to appeal to the mainstream, but they also have physical appearances that are similar. Their age is similar. Their style is similar. I'm not convinced they're not the same person and that neither one of them exists and they're both just dreams that you and I are part of.
I know that I talked about this back when it was close to happening, but there was a hot minute where CBS Sunday Morning was asked if I wanted to do a profile of David Byrne because he and Fatboy Slim, I believe, they co-wrote that Imelda Marcos-related musical called like Love Lies Here, and it was playing in Seattle. And so it was going to be a profile of him. And it was one of those things where, like, there was an availability in, like, 2 or 3 days. And they said, can you do it? Will you do it? And I said, yes, because that's my typical answer. But then I immediately started freaking out because I was like, what am I going to say to this guy? Mm-hmm. Like, I actually really like Talking Heads. But that would be the number one kind of interview to intimidate me because I just feel like he doesn't like doing interviews. Nothing I'm going to ask him is going to be interesting to him. I was excited but mostly concerned, and then it turned out it wasn't going to happen, and I was kind of relieved.
That's very rare for you. I feel like I have more moments like that in my life where I am scared to take something on, and so I hope maybe in the back of my head that it doesn't happen, and then when it doesn't happen, I'm relieved. I think it's very and I'm somewhat ashamed of those, that's kind of my personality, but it's rare to hear you in that situation.
The other person that I've had that feeling about, it is pretty rare, and it depends too on what the environment is. So the other person I've had that feeling about was Christopher Hitchens.
Oh right, yeah.
And it came down to I was supposed to interview him like it was 1 or 2 days, and he unfortunately had to cancel his show because he had received very bad news about his health. Seems to be a theme of late on this show. We're not really getting out of that today. And but then he was ill and he ended up passing away. But that was another one where it was like the day or two before I was supposed to interview him at Town Hall. And I'm just like reading his book and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. Sorry, so many F words today. That's how I process my grief.
Mm-hmm.
But then the thing is, if it was going to be like David Byrne, weirdly enough, it was like David Byrne's going to come on Livewire and you're going to be in front of a crowd. Oddly enough, I would feel more comfortable in that world than if it was me and him sitting on two stools with cameras set up interviewing for a television thing. Because what I always tell myself, like we had Salman Rushdie on Livewire, what I tell myself if it's somebody like that is, okay, they're smarter than me. They're more creative than me in whatever their particular area is. But I'll tell you what they can't F with me on. Reading this crowd and being comfortable in front of this group of people. And that is like, that's my ace in the hole. That's why I feel okay. Like, I feel like you're in my world now, Grandmama. And so with David Byrne, if it was that environment, I would have felt more okay with it. But sitting there with the TV light set up and like waiting for him to come sit down and this whole, it's a very uncomfortable artificial thing anyway to do those two ways. That would have been stressful for me, but it didn't happen. So, Andrew, if it's any consolation over your various bad feelings about how you think you take the show down in flames, I just spent 8 minutes talking about two things that literally never happened.
Well, you know, I'm thinking here of the things that when we have an opportunity to do them, and then if they fall through and I feel somewhat relieved, I think most people would say, yeah, but when they actually go through, they're never as bad as you would think, right? And it was a learning experience. And I'd like to stand here today in front of you, Luke, and say that is always the case. But it's not always the case. I still am embarrassed when I think about the candidate roundtable panel that I had to moderate, or I was invited to moderate in Burien. Do you ever, I'm sure you don't remember me doing this.
No, but I absolutely remember this. I remember this when you were doing the night show.
Yes, and I was like, you know, everybody who has a show on Cairo at some point, either they have other gigs that led them to Cairo, or Cairo will be part of a bigger kind of what's the word I'm looking for? A bigger portfolio of
portfolio.
Things, yeah, that they do, whether it's, and you've done almost all of them, whether it's kind of the auctioneering route. A lot of them have kind of side hustles as that, or you're in the more Dave Ross kind of newsman. You're asked to moderate everything. But like I was just some guy who shouldn't have had a night show, who was trying to be goofy at night, yet had some background working with you and Dave Ross and whatever. Somebody, and maybe it's a listener of this show, and I appreciate him thinking of me and thinking well enough of me to think that I should moderate some local candidate panel. But even that, like, you know, I did it. I was very, very nervous. I got there, and I just don't think that I showed up with the amount of confidence. And looking back, I sort of wish I could do it over and just walk in there like I had done it a million times before.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, it was also the first and only time I did it. I'm sure if I had to do it a second time or a third time or a fourth time, even with different cities or different candidates, different issues, whatever, I'm sure you just get better at it. But I felt like such an imposter walking in there, and I know that I just oozed out this imposterdom, which, you know, like, I think that you'd probably say that in that case, if I had just convinced myself that I belonged there, that would have been more than half the battle. And I didn't. And I'm still like, I cringe when I think about my performance.
I have a version of that, which I'm sure I've talked about before, but it was the sort of same dynamic going on, which is like maybe one of the first times I was ever somewhere allegedly, I don't want to use the word celebrity, but allegedly, like, as a person who was from a radio operation and who therefore should have been comfortable in the space of having everyone pay attention to them, but who was completely and totally terrified. And that was years and years and years and years ago when I was the intern at KUOW. Somebody faxed a press release / invite. It was basically, and I know I've talked about this on the show a long, long time ago, but it was a group in the Northwest called Puget Sound Keepers. They're an organization that tries to raise money to protect Puget Sound and the you know, flora and fauna living out there. And so one of the things they did, they had something called the Oyster Olympics, which is like a giant PR stunt. And they would invite, you know, people from TV and radio, like actually well-known people, like, you know, morning host on the country station or whatever, to come down and do a variety of different things. So they were trying to get somebody from KUOW to come down and be part of this oyster eating competition. And nobody at KUOW had the time to do it or wanted to do it. Me, the intern, I mean, again, this is just so, first of all, where did I get off even thinking anyone there would care that the intern from KUOW was there? I was just so needy and thirsty and wanting to be a quasi-celebrity that I was like, I'll go. And probably as a joke, probably the joke was on me. Somebody there said, yeah, okay, if you want to go be the KUOW representative at the Oyster Olympics, go nuts, kid. So like I roll up. But what I realize immediately when I get there is I don't know how you're supposed to be in that space because I'm not a celebrity and I don't have any confidence and no one knows who I am. And now I'm in this, and everybody else in the competition was like actually slightly well known in the local community, you know, TV weatherman or whatever. And I just, so I was so humiliated up there because that was when it really got on top of me that like nobody cares that I'm here. Nobody asked me specifically to be here. And I did a terrible job. And to this day, I think about that. So if it's any consolation, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know, though, not to turn this into a competition of who's got a more pathetic story, but for like, and that's your story. And it's a beautiful story. But for me, that highlights even more the issue or let's say the gap between our personalities, because you were kid, an intern who was at least trying to, you know, what's the expression, punch outside your weight a little bit and insert yourself. And so, okay, so you didn't do a great...
I believe it's called misrepresent myself into getting to eat free oysters, which, side note, I had never eaten a raw oyster in my life.
Ooh, how was
that? That was my first. When they said oyster eating competition, I was kind of like, I wonder what that is. And when I got there, I was like, what the F?
I hope you just
this
said,
is like,
ew, they taste like boogers.
I mean, seriously, I had never, not only had I eaten a raw oyster, I don't think I'd ever laid eyes on one. And now I'm standing there and it's like, you have to keep your hands behind your back and eat as many raw oysters, which had been laid out in these like giant platters of like ice. And all I did was fake eat them until Tall Paul, the morning host from the country station, won the competition. Mm. I just wanted it to be over as fast as possible. I'm sorry. Back to what you were
but
saying.
But anyway, I still think that like I would rather be the young Luke Burbank who is putting himself in situations that are maybe – but you're again, punching above your weight. You're trying to get in there as part – and you know, even putting on self-confidence as opposed to a 35-year-old guy who had his own night show who was acting like an intern. You know what I mean?
Well,
I was kind of like, okay,
I don't know what I'm doing, guys. But here's the thing. But here's the thing. It doesn't matter if you're 35 or if you're 20. The point is, in doing these kinds of things, the only thing that changes over time is you've just done a bunch of them.
Yeah, I
like,
suppose that is true.
Now that I have just done it a lot, the only difference fundamentally in me showing up is I now know it'll probably be fine. That's the – and I just – because I know that and because I've now done it enough, I'm not oozing the internal nervousness and feeling of like – I guess just shame. Let's just call it what it is. Probably just self-loathing. I just ooze it less visibly because my experience tells me it'll probably be fine. Like I quote unquote own it a little more when I'm there. But that's only because of doing it a bunch of times. And whether you're 20 or 35, I think when you start doing things like that, it always feels like you're a total fraud.
Well, then I guess here it is. I'm putting the call out. If anybody in Burien wants me to host any more candidate panels, I need to get my reps in. I need to get the reps in. So please invite me. I'm willing to do it in Burien or the surrounding area.
What about any other listeners that just have like local people? I mean, we know the mayor of I always get it mixed up. Is it the mayor of Edmonds? We know the mayor of Edmonds, or is it Mukilteo?
Mukilteo. Oh, I'm glad you said Mukilteo because I knew it wasn't Edmonds, but I couldn't put my finger on it. Right.
I always I think every time I see her, I think it's Edmonds, and it's always Mukilteo. It turns out it's always been Mukilteo. You've always been here. So Mukilteo. Also Niles. Nigel. Listener Nigel is a city council person somewhere up there. Maybe he's on the Edmonds. Maybe that's why I think Edmonds. Point being, we know some people in various governmental agencies, Andrew. I think you could start to really hit the circuit if you want.
I think I've made a hell of a case for myself here today. So please, Nigel, Mayor Gregerson, get at me. I have I just have so much to give, so much to offer.
Let's do this.
On your mark.
On your mark.
Get set.
Get set.
Now ready.
Ready.
Go.
Everybody
We have reached the part of the year, Andrew, where we are going to start thanking our dazzling donors.
They dazzled us. They razzled us.
Yeah.
They donored us.
what is the last thing they did?
They donored us.
Oh, yeah, they did. These dazzling donors who we'll be thanking over the next month or so are people who made a quite a contribution during last year's TBTL-a-thon. And what we're doing at that level of appreciation is basically the dazzling donor gets to tell us what they'd like us to talk about, whether they'd like us to read a message for their business or organization, whether they'd like us to play a song or just mention anything. This is their time. And could there be a more appropriate dazzling donor to kick these things off with, Andrew, than one Lin Pham?
Are you sure that's how he pronounces his last name?
I am, and I take great pride in the fact that we're one of the only shows that he's associated with that actually says his friggin' last name right.
The reason I say that is because when Emily, our TBTL-a-thon guru, asked the dazzling donors, what their message should be, she always asks to make sure we have correct pronunciation, and he wrote on his form, Luke and Andrew know me quite well, and they have the pronunciation of my name down pat. So I just wanted to wanted to litigate that for a second.
You're welcome, Lynn. We do not call him Lin Pham.
Or Pham.
Because his name is Lin Pham. Yeah, no, we know. We know what's up, because Lynn I mean, not only does Lynn maintain the definitive archive of TBTL sounds and noises known as marsupialgurgle.com, but he's a regular attendee of TBTL events. He's a regular emailer. On Friday, he let me know amidst my grief that I had apparently posted the show. It was both a stereo and mono file, so there was artifacting.
Hmm.
I mean, he's Johnny on the spot, very communicative with us, a big help to the show. And he said that he would also like us this year, as a dazzling donor, to mention to folks that he's got a Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me stats page, which is at this website. Do I have to say the HTTP part?
Yes. And the colon and the slash slash.
Well, no joke, because it's not what I would consider to be a traditional URL. It's HTTP colon backslash backslash WWDT.me, as in wait, wait, don't tell dot me. HTTP colon backslash backslash WWDT.me. And that is where any statistic you could possibly want to know about the show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which I will be attending in Austin, Texas on Thursday night. I know I'm going to see a couple of tens out there. If you want to know anything about that show, you get in touch with my man, Lynn Pham, who knows everything there is to know about the show, who's won,
Paham.
Who's lost. And we just want to thank Lynn for being a dazzling donor and for being a dedicated supporter of TBTL and for taking pictures at our live events and just being awesome, just being a really, really big part of what we're doing here.
Yeah, absolutely. In many ways, I was going to say the soul of the show. Let's say the CPU of the show, because
there's something about the soul of a farm.
But it is true. Lynn is, and we actually talked about Lynn the other day. And you know, Lynn, first of all, thank you just personally. Thank you so much for donating and for so many years and keeping the show alive. But I also know that you walk a – I'm just talking to him directly here. Everybody else mm-hmm. can listen if they want to. But I know that Lynn walks
a – If you guys have other stuff to do, go ahead and do that. We'll be here for about two more minutes.
You know, you have – you donated and you asked us to kind of give you a special shout out because you care about the show and we care about you and we appreciate it. But I also know that you walk a pretty kind of fine line where sometimes you're a shy guy and you don't want us to mention you quite as much as we do, because it seems like there are weeks that go by where we mention Lynn almost every single show for one reason or another. And I know that listeners will sometimes say, hey, Andrew made a weird snorting sound. You know, 4 minutes into Wednesday's show. Can you grab that? And
get on it, Fom.
Right. And it took something that was a kind of a passion project and a personal passion project for Paham. And
a lot of
peas,
dude.
I know. And now he's kind of at the beck and call of listeners. Mm-hmm. He's at the beck and call of us sometimes. And sometimes he's getting more attention than he even wants. So I just want to say we appreciate it, and we appreciate you putting yourself out there and kind of putting up with it and for everything you've done to kind of make the show what it is.
Yeah, you know, there's sort of the listeners to TBTL are kind of it's sort of like a tree stump. Or if you're able to kind of cut into a tree that was growing in the forest, you have kind of rings. And there are the people who are on the outer periphery of the show who kind of maybe catch an episode here and there. There are the people who are pretty regular listeners, and there are the people who listen, never miss a show. And then there are people who never miss a show, and they email us ideas, and they donate to the program. And then there's the core of the tree, and it's a pretty short list, and it's folks like Lynn who just put an inordinate amount of time and energy and thought into the world of TBTL. And we really would not be here without the whole assortment of people, but the people at the very core of this whole thing are essential to it happening. And Lynn is very much one of those people, and we really do appreciate it, Lynn.
One quick question for you, Luke. At one point did you get into the pocket of Big Tree? Because I feel like it's just a lot of tree analogies on TBTL the past few days, and mm-hmm. I feel like, is it Ents? Mm-hmm. Are the Ents paying you off?
What is that from again?
I think that's Loader, right?
Is that
right?
Loader?
I think so. I think
speaking of which,
yeah,
I wanted to say that we are still at some point going to have DFTB on the show to download his...
Oh, there he is. I was wondering where he was.
We're going to have him on to talk about his time in New Zealand, but it's been a scheduling conflict. Well, it's been a bereavement conflict last week and then a scheduling conflict this week, but we are going to have him on. That will happen. And yes, Andrew, the answer is the Ents. The Ents got to me, and now I have to make everything about trees. I have to give one tree mention per show to get my payment. So, well, thanks, Linster. We really do appreciate it, man. And you are our dazzling donor of the day. Thanks.
Hello, and welcome to Top Story.
All right, we don't have to spend a huge amount of time on this first story. I want to make sure we do also get to the guy battling the coyotes, because I think I promoted it on Friday, and then Nora and I never really got to it. So I don't want to keep kicking that can down the road, but I also do want to talk about this Heaven's Door whiskey, which was written about in the New York Times over the weekend. What apparently happened was, there was this guy named Mark Bushala. He's a liquor entrepreneur. He had a brand of bourbon that he launched and then sold very successfully. He made like $150 million off of selling this bourbon that he was making. So he's basically sort of retired at 52. Really understood the spirits industry and was also an obsessive fan of Bob Dylan. And it would appear, I guess, I don't know, he's just searching like whiskey patent applications, and he sees that there's been one filed under Bob Dylan's name. This is back in 2015, and it was for something called bootleg whiskey, a patent, or trademark, I should say, application on behalf of Bob Dylan. And this dude, Mark Bushala, saw it and was like, oh my God. Bob Dylan's trying to make a whiskey. I know how to make whiskey. I love Bob Dylan. And so he basically like calls up Bob Dylan's rep and says, I want a Bob Dylan trying to make a whiskey. Let me make it for him. And apparently impresses the rep enough that he gets a private call with friggin' Bob Dylan about making this whiskey. And so they combine forces, and he, Bushala, and I guess a partner start whipping up this certain, I don't know, whiskey recipe seems like the wrong word, but they start working with Bob Dylan. What it sounds like, though, is that Bob Dylan actually doesn't, he likes to drink whiskey sometimes. He's not a whiskey expert. He doesn't know how to make whiskey. So he has a side interest in making like metal art. And he's got some kind of metal art studio in Los Angeles. Bob Dylan does, and he just like hangs out there. So this thing starts where this dude, Bushala, and his business partner start showing up at Bob Dylan's like ironworks in L.A. and bringing him versions of this whiskey they're making. And he would like, Bob Dylan would like taste it and then give them super weird feedback. Like one time he said it should feel like being in a wood structure. That was what Bob Dylan told him it needed to taste like.
Mm-hmm.
This is from the New York Times. They struggled to decode the remark. What kind of wooden structure? A church? A railroad car? A barn? That led Mr. Bushala and Mr. Perry first to probing discussions about the nose, the liquor's aroma in the glass, and then to experiment in how they toasted the barrels in which the whiskey was aged. Months later, they returned to Dylan with a sample that they felt embodied the sweet, musty smell of a barn. They presented it to Mr. Dylan, who commented approvingly.
Mm.
His oblique feedback, Mr. Perry said, really helped us think about the barrel finishing in a different way. Bullshit. By the way, I added that part.
Right.
Yep. Like, give me a brark. Like, Bob Dylan is famous. Bob Dylan is under no obligation to try to let anyone know in a clear way what he's thinking or feeling. Bob Dylan is also very savvy, I think, with business, and realized this was a chance for him to make a bunch of money. Because, by the way, he's also somewhat of a partner in this. But to tell me that Bob, as the possible drinker of this whiskey, to tell me that Bob Dylan goes, may it taste like I'm in a wood box, to, or whatever, to tell It's impossible to say. Okay, let's do this exercise.
Yeah, I can't do
let's
it
do this exercise.
Do
ready?
Uh-huh.
No, no. But try to say this without naturally slipping into some nightmare Bob Dylan impression. Mm-hmm. Try. Say it should feel like being in a wood structure. Say that knowing it's something Bob Dylan uttered, and don't do the impression. Let me hear you say that. It should feel like being in a wood structure.
Did I do it? Did I slip
not.
In, or did I say that
you
in my regular? That was my tongue,
so,
though. That was my tongue
it was
surgery.
It was almost. You have a future as a plugged-in folk rocker. It was so subtle that I almost couldn't even tell, but it was happening.
That reminds me when you. I actually didn't read this story, but when you said at the beginning of the show that was the type of feedback he was giving. I thought immediately, like, I feel like you've told stories where you've been doing voiceover work, and that's the type of feedback you've gotten from directors.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I like that
one
read.
I
like that one, but could you make it sound more like you are inside of a wooden structure when you say it?
One time, somebody said, "Can you do that tick again, but braver?" That stands out of my mind as a very difficult action to embody for a grocery store voiceover, for instance. Can you please say Tualatin Town Center more braver?
There's a scene like that. By the way.
No, sorry. I always make that mistake. It's Tannisborn Town Center. Now Hagen Grocery, now available in Wilsonville, Tigard, Tualatin, and Tannisborn Town Center.
Just a quick plug that does not need us to plug it because it's huge. But I guess I'm telling you this, Luke, because I haven't heard you mention it yet. But if you are not watching Atlanta, I highly recommend it. That was Bob Dylan.
So you did it again.
That was like Bob Dylan. He started off as Bob Dylan. It turned into a clown, and then it came back down to Andrew. All in one
turned
word.
Turned into my former Bible teacher, Pastor Trevor Harris. Hi. He was from Ireland. Hi. There was a man. And he was so – and Pastor Harris just like snap his fingers sometimes when he was making a point. But he would say hi a lot. Like in the part of a sentence where we were not used to it occurring. But
yeah.
Anyway, keep going.
Anyway, I just think that you'll love it. You definitely have to get into it. It is one of the and it also does not really follow that much of a narrative. Like once you kind of know who the characters are, you can dip in and dip out. I mean, there is an overarching narrative arc. I don't know, man. Get off my back.
Camera.
Do I say camera funny? But it is a show that you can dip in and out of once you know who the characters are. And I just, Luke, that is a personal recommendation from me to you. It is unlike any other television show out there, I think.
Okay. Duly noted. Duly noted. That was like if Bob Dylan was in a Casey Kasem impersonation contest and was losing.
This is so bad. Everybody thinks they can do a Dylan, and everybody does a Dylan, and here we are just doing our Dylan.
Doing our dude Dylan gents. Does that work? Is that
I'm going to write it down.
Is that a show title?
We'll figure something
dude
out.
Dude Dylan gents?
I think so, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
That is.
I like
I'm going to give that a.
That's a pretty good spoof.
I'm going to give that 5 out of 10. I won't use. I was going to say duly noted because I have – Atlanta is one of those prestige shows that everybody says you should watch. I like all – everyone I know who's associated with it I really like. But I keep trying to wait until the right moment because I feel like I need to start from the beginning. I need to block out some time, and maybe that's been part of my problem because I'm very quick to embrace – or I'm much more likely to pick up a show that I feel like doesn't involve that level of attention. Like I just last night on a whim, I started watching this Netflix show called World's Most Extraordinary Homes. And which my brother had mentioned, and also Rich and Linda, who are definitely real people.
Sure.
When I was a kid about your age.
I'm sorry. That's what I get. I was going to Netflix to try to double check the name, and I think it auto loads something. Apologies. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they mentioned that show, and I started watching it, and I love it. If you are a home, the world's most extraordinary homes. If you are a real estate creeper like I am, and you've already watched Wild Wild Country. Go check out the world's most extraordinary homes. It's It's a co-creation of the – well, really what it is, I think it's a BBC show that like Netflix optioned. But it's this architect who's really likable and knows his stuff, and it's a woman who is, I believe, a well-known actor in the UK who really loves architecture. And it's so great. Like it's like the same part of my brain that likes those HGTV shows, but then with way more interesting feedback and reaction to these amazing homes. They go, they stay in the homes, they analyze them, they talk to the owners, they talk to the architects. It's like a very smart approach to what is basically, and forgive me for the term, but what is basically just real estate porn, just like looking at houses. But this is like with really interesting commentary on it. So anyway, my point is I pick that up because it's like, well, if I don't like it, doesn't matter. Or if I can only watch half of an episode. Atlanta in my mind feels like I need to be ready for it. But I need to get over that. Maybe I'll watch it on the plane. I'll download some episodes and watch it on the plane going to Austin on Wednesday night. How about that?
Well, do you know that that's like Atlanta is basically Donald Glover and a couple of his friends just kind of go around DeKalb County, just like kind of going into people's houses and talking about what walls they might knock out, how they would improve things. And they talk about like kind of how the market has changed over the past several years and how it's changing. That's mostly what Atlanta is.
I didn't know that. Now that
I need to end so this weird show and have been watching.
Get right to the program. Let me tell you about this guy in Rutland, Massachusetts. By the way, again, hat tip to listener Chris who sent this. His name is Brian Hutchins, and he lives. He's age 49, as I mentioned. He lives in Rutland, and he went out to check on his chickens, and he was attacked by a coyote. And the audio of him describing the attack is. It's really something. Take a listen to this.
Around here, there's a lot of dangerous animals. And all I was doing was going in to put my chickens in. That's it. And all hell broke loose. So I came out here. I had my hood on. Put my hood up. And I'm walking over here and lunged right from there right to my back. I went to I looked at the chickens for like 2 seconds.
I like he was looking at the chickens for help. Like, guys, anything?
Nothing?
I was out here to help you. I got a coyote on my back. I'm in a scene from Game of Thrones right now. There's a dire wolf attacking me. Could you guys shake a leg? Could you do anything at all?
And it jumped, landed right on my back, and it tried to bite the back of my neck. So I just grabbed it, pulled it over, I grabbed my knife, and I just kept stabbing it. That's all I could do. And it was kicking me in the face. So then it just meow, took off in the woods. It was going, ar, 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 and it took off.
And there was two more on the edge.
And there was two more right there. I had no idea, but I wasn't. I mean, it's dark out, 8:30, and I just, just reaction. Like it jumped on my back and it was biting the back of my head. And I'm like, this thing's nuts. So I just grabbed it, ripped it over, and just kept stabbing it. The back was down and it was flipping around, but it was kicking me as I was stabbing it. And I didn't get any puncture wounds on the back of my neck, but my neck hurts pretty bad.
He said he used an old wrestling move to get the coyote off his back. And I should say, yeah, in the interest of accuracy, there were other coyotes in the yard, but they did not go and attack him. I have to say, if a coyote jumped on my back, I would just pretty much just go, well, I've had a good run. Have at it. I would be so petrified, I think, by the whole event. Or I don't know, maybe I would kick into some kind of weird survival mode. But I honestly think, you know, some people are like, they get scared and they do something. They go active. And some people get scared and they freeze. I'm more in the I get scared, I freeze category.
Mm-hmm.
I think, honestly, I would be – like if I think about a coyote or any kind of somewhat apex predator thing jumping on me unexpectedly. Like he was coming out of his basement, I think, so the coyote was up above where he was and it jumped on him. If I had thought of that thing jumping on me, I honestly think I would freeze. I'd be so scared and then that'd probably be the end of me.
Yeah, listening to that tape, all I hear over and over again in my own head is, Andrew, you just don't have the stuff. And I don't know exactly what the
stuff
is.
Don't move to Rutland.
Yeah, but I just don't have the stuff. And I'm with you. I also think when it comes to animals and humans, although, see, maybe with your experience, how do I put this delicately? You know, fighting people in bowling alley parking lots, you would be slightly
threatening
more prepared
to fight people, calling people out right. who I later had to order a pizza from, but right. then we became best friends.
By the way, still waiting for your guys' sitcom to come out. but, that's kind of it for me with fighting as well. I remember, I mean, the last time that I've been in a situation where I might have to lay hands on another human being has been decades and decades. It would have been in high school when somebody's menacing you or you go out to Dave Thomas Arena to supposedly fight somebody behind the Wendy's. But the reality of actually putting your hands and like punching somebody or when an animal is going crazy, whether it's your own animal and you're just trying to calm it down, like when Theo was having his, you know.
Yeah, you've
Theo
actually got more experience in this department than I do.
Yeah, and it's a very unsettling, scary thing. And the idea when an animal is on you or doing something, whether it's a raccoon or I've never been attacked by a raccoon, but they've menaced me before.
Wait, when were you menaced by a raccoon?
I remember standing on the porch of my old, old apartment in Seattle on Capitol Hill years ago, smoking a cigarette and just like on my porch. And I noticed a raccoon was right in front of me. It walked kind of like out of the darkness. I was standing underneath a light on the porch and it was kind of darkness in the yard, but it's picture it cinematically where I'm kind of like standing in the center of a circle of light and a raccoon walks into that circle of light and is staring me down right in front of me. Now I'm like three steps up on a porch and it's looking right at me. And then almost immediately, like a few seconds later, two of its buddies come in at the flanks. Like it was very Ooh. Cinematic. So they're just like Yikes. All looking at me. Kind of the other two are at the angles and they're all facing me. I'm just like, oh, wow, this is scary. And I remember kind of flicking my cigarette butt in the general direction of one. And I honestly did not flick it so that it would hit the animal. I just wanted to scare it. These are animals. They should be scared of humans and their cancer sticks. So I like kind of flicked my cigarette in their general direction and the main one kind of ran up to the cigarette and I was like out over my head. And I just like ran upstairs and I told Genevieve, there are raccoons outside. And one of them looked at me. And that was the end of that story. So I've been menaced by
Jeez,
raccoons.
Dude, that would freak me out though.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I get scared when I'm in my car and I drive by and like a raccoon's crossing the street. Because mm-hmm. I remember that when I was like actually pretty young. I think it was like in my neighborhood in Seattle where I grew up on 77th Street. I remember a raccoon that my memory of it is his back was almost as high as the hood of my Honda Civic. And like he was in the middle of the day crossing the street and I was like, he could probably tip this car over. Like it's like, so I can only imagine, yeah, if I had been in your position, that would really freak me out.
Yeah. So anyway, that's long and rambly, but I will say if an animal was on me, I think you have this knee-jerk reaction to get it off you, but also when it's time to stab, as this guy did, I don't know that you and I have what it takes to then go on the offense. Maybe I'm wrong, but it just when you're dealing with a living creature, I think it's just really tough to just
see. I would take a human. I would fight a bowling alley manager any day over a coyote.
Oh yeah, me too.
Like that's what
I
mean. That's like because I don't even think honestly. I don't think you can even compare the two things. Like because humans
they both work nights. I mean, if you had to compare them, I would start there.
If we had to compare and contrast that. Bowling alley manager from I can't even
Imperial
remember
Lanes.
Majestic Lanes
Imperial Lanes
and a coyote in Massachusetts. These would be the similarities and the dissimilarities. Yeah, no, I don't think my experience of fighting humans, which by the way I'm very rusty at. I need to. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole reason I started going to therapy was so I would stop doing that, and so it's good that I'm not doing it enough to be. You know, it's good that I'm rusty at it because it means I haven't been doing it very much. But, you know, you know what's going to bite me in the butt is I'm going to need to fight someone at a bowling alley, and I'm going to have no idea how to do it now.
Somebody's going to try to close your lane early, and then what are you going to do? You're going to have no recourse.
Do you think if I went back to – I mean, it's been years now. If I happened to be down in that part of Seattle and I went back to that bowling alley and that dude still works there. Oh, by the way, dude was way bigger than me. Very lucky for me that he did not answer the challenge to go outside and fight. Way taller than me, outweighed me.
But
by,
he
by
did
40
go
pounds.
Outside, right? He did go
did
outside.
Not
you
go
guys
outside.
Were circling
not,
each other, no? I remember being in the parking lot and like –
I do not – my memory is that we did not get to that point, but I guess I could be wrong. My memory was I was trying to call him out in the bowling alley, and he was standing behind the register, and I can't remember what he was saying, but I do not think he was taking the bait. And then we went outside, and maybe I was still yelling at him.
Oh, maybe we were all just upset outside.
I don't personally remember him being outside the bowling alley trying to fight me. But I wonder if I went back today, because again, we really did – I'm not just trying to shine this turd of a decision-making process by me up, but I wonder – because we really did end up being total buds, like, I don't know, months later when we went back in there, and I hoped he didn't recognize me, but he did, and I apologized, and he laughed, and then we – didn't he give us free
– Yeah, vouchers or something. Yeah.
Somethings. But anyway, I wonder if I went back there if he would still remember me. Like, I wonder how often people try to fight him.
Can I?
I wonder if I'm like – I'm on a relatively short list of people who've tried – of adult men who work in public radio who've tried to fight him.
That's why they keep the vouchers. They're called public radio fight vouchers. I have some sad news for you, though, but I'm pretty sure that that bowling alley has gone the way of the condominium.
No!
Yes. I'm pretty sure. Yes,
really?
Yeah. That you know that place was too beautiful to live. It was just old school. There was nothing hipster or nice or new about it. It was just a cool bowling alley.
What are they putting
alley.
In its place? They
I don't know.
They pulled a condo down there behind the friggin' basket. Baskin Robbins and 7-Eleven,
or it might be a CVS. Who knows?
Are you saying this because of actual knowledge, or are you just saying?
Oh no, I remember we've talked about it on the show that it's closed. Yeah, permanently closed. But I don't know what's there right now. Here, let me do a Google News or a Google Street View and see if I can figure out what's there now. I do not know. I don't know what's there now, but it's definitely been torn down. It's been gone.
Many more fights I could have gotten.
I know. That's the real.
That really sucks, though, because that part of town, like, I know whatever Seattle real estate prices, all that. But, like, that's still in a pretty – like, I can't imagine that they needed to knock that building down to put something right there right now. Eventually, maybe. But I bet you there's not, like, a condo building on that parking lot. I think, you know, they talk a lot about how, like – and by they, I mean us. We talk a lot about how bowling alleys are not a very – at this point – efficient use of space that could always be like in Ballard, the one that used to be Sunset Lanes is now a condo place. Mm-hmm. The place that used to be Leilani Lanes on Greenwood is now a, I think it's like a storage, like a monthly storage, or actually it might be apartments and condos too with some storage. But anyway, point being, there are places where like you, that's a huge footprint and they could put something there that's going to make more money. Mm-hmm. But I think the problem for the one that was down there in, I guess you could, it's not the Rainier Valley, but off of Rainier, is that I don't think there was anything more important or more valuable to go there right now. Probably just not enough people were going to the
bowling.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
And
I think I was being a little shitty because, yeah, I don't know that it's actually torn down. That I was just guessing on. And actually the building itself isn't even as big as the parking lot. If you'll recall, that was like a building that sat in a sea of parking lot. It was a very LA kind of thing. And that area is building up because, I mean, now we're just talking super local real estate here, which is, you know, again, Atlanta is a whole show based on that, so I don't see why people wouldn't enjoy hearing us talk about it. That area is building up. I mean, you know, because as Capitol Hill, you know, like all the kind of younger people who are being pushed out of Capitol Hill as that becomes Tesla Town are being pushed further and further south, and so you're seeing more and more kind of development in those areas too. Like that that big pho place. Remember there was that kind of real dirty, but I liked it. It was a real dirty pho place called Pho Bach, I believe. I saw that they're still there, but they built like a new – it's like a new nice building there. Now it's like it seems like not upscale, but like, you know, a place you would take a date. And so I feel like it's starting to be a little less kind of rough around the edges down there.
And yet, despite all of the economic pressure, there's still lots of places that can apparently house a weed place. Can
oh,
we
yeah.
somehow combine like, everything? Everything is by the way, there's you know, there's a weed place up in Blaine on the way to Semiahmoo, up here where I live, called Dank of America. You gotta say that's pretty good, right? I mean, honestly,
that's a pretty good spoof. Oh,
and they have crap. They're painted like Roman columns, like. It's like attached to a gas station. It's not a very spectacular building, but it is called Dank of America, and their logo does have like three Roman columns, kind of Bank of America style.
Veeves and I tried to come up with what we would name a weed store because there are so all many right. of them are punny, and I can't remember any of the good ones, but I remember the worst one. The absolute worst one we came up with was, oh, hi, buddy. Of course, spelled H-I-G-H. Emphasis on the bud. All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says, sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
Hey, how's your tongue feeling, by the way?
It feels okay. It feels all right. I think what's happening to me right now, though, is I had my first cup of coffee during the show. The first cup of coffee I've had in what feels like a long time. And I feel like the blood is just racing through my veins. I'm practically shaking over here. So my apologies if I'm talking about
you wired. You are wired.
Wired to the point where I feel where it's almost problematic. It was just one cup of coffee. But I do have some things I want to play for you. Oh, by the way.
All right.
My apologies. I heard you mention on Thursday's show, you're like, Andrew sent me some voicemails, but he didn't send me the actual audio. Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. I think I meant to attach the voicemail.
I promise
to
I wasn't
email.
Bringing that up to subtweet you. I was honestly just stream of consciousness looking at things and then saying words.
Right.
That was not my way of trying to give you shit.
But that was it. Yeah, I sent you like, here are the voicemails you can play, and I did not attach the audio at all. So we can play some of those. I did want to play this or start by reading this, though. This is from listener, and I believe I'm pronouncing this correctly, Alana. I think her name, because it's a weird. It looked like an I and an L, but it's hard to tell. Could have been two L's, but then her name would be Lana, like Llama. Anyway, I think it's Alana. She says, my father, who is a huge fan of your podcast, started hyping up your show, and so I gave it a listen. I'm 17 years old, going to college, and so I'm leaving my friends, but your podcast gave us the inspiration to create our own. So my guess here is they're going to be going to separate places, but want to keep in touch by doing this podcast project together. She says, you guys are huge influencers in what we plan on doing. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Wanted to be an influencer.
We are just now getting started. If you have any tips to help us make our podcast, there will be three of us, the best it can be. Please let me know. I would love to have some of your advice. And then a smiley face. And what I like about this smiley face is the smile is on the other side of the colon. Usually it's colon and then parentheses. This is parentheses, then colon. So I think that's a hint as to how the young people are doing it these days.
That's I feel cooler I have. Just knowing that.
Yeah.
Okay. So the advice we're supposed to be giving advice on what? How to do a podcast?
I guess how to do a podcast. And first of all, I think I read that a lot of times people will email us with questions on how to start a podcast. And usually I just point for, especially for technical related stuff, I point people to a website called transom.org, which is run by, do you remember the guy's name? Who is that guy?
Transom. I'm going to guess, and it's going to be wrong.
It's the guy who's out on the Cape. You know, he was... Allison. Right?
Jay Allison.
Yeah, I think it's
He's Transom guy? I always find that weird at the end. Like, when he does... Because he also kind of... He'll intro the moth, right, sometimes?
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
And he'll say... Must be a regional thing. It must be a Utica thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he has this way of describing... How do I put this? The fact that I'm only half remembering this is going to make this even less interesting to listen to. By the way, Alana, this is exactly how you host a podcast. Mm-hmm. You half remember a thing Jay Allison says and then criticize it. No, but he says, like, on Cape, I'm Jay Allison on Cape, whatever, on Martha's Vineyard or something.
Yeah.
I think maybe he says on Cape Cod or on Martha's Vineyard. For some reason, the construction of that always sounds weird to me. Like, I feel like it should be in Cape Cod.
Yeah, but like, it must be a regional thing, yeah.
It must be, because I would never say, like, I'm Luke Burbank on Bellingham Bay.
Hmm.
I might say, but I guess
you would
say
on Bainbridge Island, though.
Yeah, you would. Huh, good point.
Hmm.
So that's the other way you do podcasting.
So there, I think we answered your question.
To a solution.
I don't know if we have any great advice. I know that the advice you always give, Luke, is it depends on what your goal for this podcast is, Alana. I mean, if a big part of it is to make it a project that you guys can all work on as a way of kind of maintaining your connections to each other, and you're mostly doing it for yourselves, I think that it's important to remember that. That's kind of a driving principle that Genevieve and I have with After These Messages, which is we didn't start that because we wanted someday to have After These Messages be a source of income for us, or so that we could be listed in the top commercial-related podcasts of 2018. Although, judges, if you're still looking for entrants, it'd be nice to be considered. We did it because we realized, well, I have a podcast situation, you know, set up in my room here, and it would just be a fun thing for us to do. And that is the number one reason we're doing it. And if anything starts to creep in for us, that starts to make it seem like, I don't want to say make it seem like work, because we do kind of work on it and we try to make it as good as we can. But we put up walls around it so that we make sure that it's not something that we dread every week. As much as possible, it's something that we look forward to that is fun. But that is that particular podcast. If we were starting a different podcast that we really wanted someday, we wanted as many ears on it as possible, we wanted potentially to have income on it down the road, then I would think that the approach that we would take would be very different. So the first thing I would do is say, like, why are you doing this? What are the goals for your podcast? And then that'll help you answer some of the other questions around it.
Yeah, I think that managing, not even managing your expectations, but just knowing what you want it to be. You're right, Andrew, that's a big thing. And then I would just say, imagine hosting a podcast as like a coyote jumping on your back.
Mm-hmm. Or a bowling alley manager not jumping on your back.
Right. Shutting a bowling alley lane down early. You just got to stab it with a knife until it's in the iTunes top 100. And then as soon as it's not in the top 100, you have to start saying things like, the top 100 doesn't matter. That's not even a real thing. If there's any metric for your podcast, if there's any metric for your podcast that no longer serves your narrative, dismiss it as a non-important metric. I just say keep doing that until one day you're a big success.
And we'll let you know what that's like when that happens.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else?
Yeah, I want to play a voicemail. I had mentioned to you on the show that I feel like my parents were the enemies of the bass clef. I grew up in a family. My parents really wanted me and my sister, to play musical instruments. My sister's older than me, so she picked out her band instrument first, which was the clarinet, and she was really good at it. Very, very talented, and she kind of blazed a path. So that when I became old enough, I think it was fourth grade when we were supposed to pick out our instruments, my parents expected me to be good at playing an instrument as well. Turns out I didn't have that kind of natural talent that my sister had. Also, I chose the trombone, which brought me a lot of joy because it's fun. It's got a slide.
Yeah.
And it's got a slide. And so that makes it a lot of fun. But I think my parents were kind of disappointed with the farting sounds that they heard coming from my trombone as I was forced to practice for a half hour every night up in my room. And so they eased me off of the bass clef and pushed me to the cornet. But anyway, I got this voicemail from a from another trombone lover.
Hey, dummies. This is Amanda in Bonnie Lake. I just quickly wanted to bro down with Andrew a little bit. When I was going into sixth grade, we went and had a presentation for band so we could pick out our instruments. And I came home, and I told my parents that I wanted to play trombone. And I was very excited about the trombone, and it was just an amazing instrument. My dad looked at me, and my dad said, "You play saxophone or you are not in band." And that is the story of how my dad took up the saxophone and I didn't join band. Power out.
How much is, how common is that, that parents are, and I don't think this is necessarily the case with my parents, but they're trying to live maybe vicariously through their children when it comes to maybe sports or certain arts?
Definitely with sports. To me, it feels like most of the musical instrument related stuff, maybe it's mostly as it pertains to like horns and stuff, but it seems like it's mostly a question of what's going to be the least annoying instrument to hear your kid practicing.
Maybe.
Like, by the way, trombone, I mentioned this last week probably. Carrie and I went to see Pink Martini here in Bellingham, and like the trombone player was, I think, arguably the most talented musician on the whole stage, a stage full of talented musicians. But like he made sounds with that trombone. It was so musical. It was not just farting sounds.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredible. And so anyway, I just want to say for the trombone players out there, I don't want you guys to think that, that I have a low opinion of the trombone just because, Andrew, for you, it was, you had trouble making beautiful music with it. Why do you say enemies of the bass clef? I don't know enough about music to understand what that means.
Well, you know, like if you're playing, let's say, the clarinet or anything that is more treble, and I'm, you know, going to say a million things wrong here and make the listeners mad who know even the tiniest bit about music. But if you're playing one of the instruments that carries the melody in the marching band, that's good because you can just be listening to it and you're carrying the tune. But if you're somebody who's just like, you know, providing bass support, it's just like, brr, brr. I mean, this is really insulting to trombone players, of course. But, you know, I wasn't playing the melodies. I was playing the bass in the background. And when you only hear that and you don't have a bunch of other instruments playing the melody in front of it, I'm sure that it sounded like, and also I wasn't very good, I'm sure it just sounded like horrible, just like these long bass notes coming from the room upstairs.
See, but even that, the fact that you've already described something that's well beyond my knowledge when it comes to music. So clearly, I mean,
everything
even
you
just that that's
everything you know about the bass clef, you learn from A Right Way to Rock and A Wrong Way to Roll.
Exactly. Everything I learned about bass solos.
Hey, we should go Speaking of which, Glenn Miller. Oh wait, were you going to say what we should go?
Oh, no, I've got a new band that I'm obsessed with.
Oh, yeah?
But I'll wait till Music for Your Weekend. I don't want to waste that on a going out music. Why Glenn Miller?
Isn't Glenn Miller the most famous trombonist? Who's the most famous trombonist? Does he play trombone?
Ooh. I didn't know that. I thought Glenn Miller was just a band leader. Was he also playing trombone? Not saying you're wrong.
No, I know, but now I'm just really in my head about this. Glenn Miller. Yeah, pictures of him with trombones. Yeah. He was a band leader, but he was a trombonist.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Okay, good.
I think you're thinking of Steve Miller.
I am thinking of Steve Miller. God, I don't like Steve Miller.
Dude, let's go out with some Glenn Miller. You know me, I'm a jazz man.
Oh, I forgot
I'm into
a jazz man now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Could go out with In the Mood. Let's go out with In the Mood.
Is it true that Glenn Miller died in a plane crash?
I want to say or he disappeared plane during the war.
Or disappeared, and it was like a military flight, right?
I thought so.
I believe that he was disappearance. He was at Miller was to fly from the United Kingdom to Paris to make arrangements and move his entire band there in the near future. His plane, a single engine, blah blah blah, departed from
famous
Twinwood Farm in Clapham. There were flying over the English Channel. There were two others on board the plane, and I guess the plane disappeared. I don't think it was a military. I think it might have been a military plane he was on, but I don't know if that was because he was
USO,
doing something. Something USO, is that what? Was that what? That
according to Wikipedia, it says while he was traveling to entertain U.S. troops in France during World War II, his aircraft disappeared in bad weather over the English Channel. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's play. Let's go out with some Glenn Miller.
All right.
I love this.
Let's
stuff.
Do that. And then should we name the show "Dude Dylan Gents"?
I mean, I like that one a lot. I also like have Trolling the Trash Man and Public Radio Fight Vouchers. But I mean, I think Due Diligence.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, that was my spoof,
no,
but
I
kind of, I'm not often proud of my spoofs,
no,
but when I am,
good.
I force you to make them the show title.
Yeah, no, I like, I'm 100% on board with Due Diligence. So, hey, Luke, I just to be corny for a second, I'm glad to be back on the show. Again, thank you for taking care of business last week. And just personally, you know, I know that it's been really tough. How are you feeling on this Monday? We didn't talk about it earlier because I wasn't sure if you wanted to set the tone, but I know it must have been a tough weekend for you.
Thanks for asking. You know, there was a get together in Seattle on Saturday with a bunch of people who were all friends of Jason's, and so that was really kind of nice to just be with other people who knew him and were his friends. So that was sort of cathartic, and I think I'm feeling a lot better this week, which comes with its own feelings of wait. Am I moving on too quickly from this? Mm-hmm. But I think what's happening is the reality of the situation, of the fact that he's passed away, that's not jarring me as much because I've had a little more time to kind of acclimate to that idea. And then just thinking about his awesome qualities and sharing stories with our friends and doing impressions of him, that's been kind of a nice feeling. I guess probably what'll happen as an even, you know, Nora McInerney was saying this on Friday. To this day, she will have moments of realization that her husband, Aaron, passed away. Like, she'll be like, oh, my God, he actually passed away. Like, it will still occur to her years later as almost a new thought or a new realization. And I bet you that'll be me with Jason for a long time. So I guess I'm doing better than I was doing last week. But again, I also feel like maybe that's shitty of me. Maybe I should, maybe I need to be in some sort of state of paralysis for a longer amount of time where I'm not properly honoring my friend's memory. I don't really know.
You know, that's not true. But I understand that.
I understand why
you feel that way, but you know that that's not true.
Well, and you know, I've said a version of this probably on Thursday's kind of abbreviated show and probably on Friday's show. But you know, what is happening for me with this is that it is a learning experience. I haven't been through something like this exactly before, but it's also like experiencing it and learning kind of maybe to some degree how to go through it and how to move through it. Unfortunately, it's probably it's a useful skill set to have in this life. You know what I mean? Like,
certainly inevitable, I guess.
Exactly. I mean, if any of us make it to a ripe old age, it also means that we're gonna have to deal with the passing of a lot of people in our life, and so I guess I'm just learning the ropes on this, and it sucks, but it's probably a useful thing to kind of to like the next time something happens, you know, I get maybe I'll know a little bit more about the feelings as they're coming and how it's gonna work and what it might look like, and something about like learning how to grieve is oddly, I wouldn't say it's comforting, but I feel like I'm learning a skill that I'm going to need in the rest of my life. And I guess if you got to learn it, at least I'm learning it. Is that a weird thing to say?
No, I don't think so.
I'm doing a lot better. So, I appreciate you asking, and not to be corny, but it's really nice to have you back. I missed you, and I'm glad you're back, and I'm very much looking forward to hearing later in this week that you were freaking out over nothing,
mm-hmm.
and that your tongue is going to be just fine.
Well, the good news is I have chosen a line of work where the tongue is not that essential. So that is, I mean, that's the bright lining to all of this. No, I apologize if I got a little bit too, I feel a little bit bad for being so frank before a little
You
bit.
Shouldn't.
Okay.
Hey, that's another thing that I'm learning. Like, honestly, between Thursday's show and even Friday's show, but mostly Thursday's. My natural instinct is to beat myself up over not doing a good job talking about Jason and also somehow making it about me and somehow like being overly emotional, but also weirdly not emotional enough. Mm-hmm. I have nothing but bad feelings about that Thursday show.
Oh, really?
But I know that that's probably just, that's just the little weird shitty guy that lives inside of me that I've named Lenny, aka my kind of my insecurity and my whatever you call it, the bad feelings I carry around about myself. So I'm telling myself that that's probably the most likely why I feel that way. And I guess what I would say to you is don't listen to that guy, because you talking about what you went through with your tongue, and also the fact that right now at this moment on Monday as we record this, you're feeling a little nervous and a little unsettled to find out what it was they took out of your tongue. That's not boring, and that's not you didn't say anything there that you have anything to apologize over. But I also understand why you feel that way, because I feel that way about Thursday's TBTL.
I meant I'm sorry I was being so frank about the garbage. No, just joking. I just feel like I left nothing to the imagination when it came to the schedule of compost pickup at my house.
Oh, you know what I was actually trying to say about that? What I am also learning on the heels of doing that Thursday show is that you and I being honest, even though we usually feel like shit about it later because we think we didn't nail some part of it, it almost is always better when we do that, and it almost always resonates with the listeners more, and it's almost never as bad as we think it is. I think because when you and I are being honest and unguarded, which it's crazy to the listeners to hear that there are moments where we're more unguarded than other moments, because I'm sure listening to this, it just sounds like, hey, two people just had emotional diarrhea for an hour and 20 minutes and called it a show. Like, no, there are lots of times on the show where we are not saying every little thing in our mind. Then there are some times when we do that, and it's a vulnerable feeling. And it always – usually I always look back on it thinking that didn't go well. But what I'm learning with the response from the listeners having done that Thursday show about Jason is that – when we are vulnerable, I think people give us a benefit of the doubt. I think they go with us on it. And so I'm glad that you talked about how you really feel and didn't try to be a cool guy or not talk about what was on your mind, is what I'm trying to say to you.
I guess if I have any regrets about that while we're just talking about it is I don't want – and people can still hear us talking now unless I edit this all out – is I don't want
– is this show still happening?
Yeah, I don't want people carrying my burden. You know, like people have a – as we've been talking about a lot this week and – or I guess last week and all of this stuff is the community of TBTL. But it also means that we have this – we have a very close relationship with our listeners, those we've met and those we haven't met, and those who run things like www.dtm.me. I think I got it right. I think that people internalize the show. People feel like they really know. So I don't, in the same way, you don't want to worry your parents or your kids or whatever. Like, I don't want the listeners now being like, oh, and I'm now, I listen to TBTL for an escape. I don't want to be worrying about Andrew. So nobody worry.
We've crossed that Rubicon long ago. Mm. Like, the listeners are officially worried about us at this point. I'm trying to think of an example. Like, this is not the kind of show. We don't have that sort of distance from the listeners at this point. So if we're worried about something, the listeners are worried about it. And if we are trying to act like we're not, they usually pick up on it anyway. So I don't think you're not saddling the listeners. I don't think you're saddling the listeners with anything. I think you're just being talking about how you really feel. And I think that that's probably a good North Star for us when it comes to doing this show. So
how do you feel about
Alana,
going out? Yeah, go ahead.
Or whatever your name was, that's how you do a podcast.
Yeah,
you get a
sure.
scary medical diagnosis and then you I mean, you want to talk about a real cliffhanger for this week. I mean, our tune-in factor on Friday is going to be through the roof.
Is Nora the new host or not? All right, let's go. I think this is an upbeat. Yeah, this really matches. Yeah. This matches the mood. Let's do it. It's like
God.
It's like I'm showering in the jazz age.
You've always been here, Andrew. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, enjoy your Monday. Go Mariners.
Indeed.
Go eat a bagel. I know, right? Go AL West second place.
Yes.
With a bullet, Seattle Mariners. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.